840 Galesburg's Morning News. Sam Erda, Tyler Gum, Nick Isher. Thanks for being with us here on this Monday morning. Coming up Thursday night, Fat Fish Pub. He is back again. It's become kind of a yearly thing, which is really, really cool. Paul Thorne will be in concert along with Alice Drinks the Kool-Aid out of Chicago, opening up the show at 6 o'clock. And the latest album from Paul Thorne, Don't Let the Devil Ride. And joining us here this morning, the one and only Paul Thorne. Paul, good morning. How are you today?
Man, I'm doing good. How you doing?
Very good. Thanks for joining us again. I know we've gotten to chat a little bit in the past. I always love getting a chance to talk with you. And, yeah, I wanted to talk about your newest album. Came out last year, Don't Let the Devil Ride. We just a little bit before the break we went on, I was playing a little clip of your rendition of Love Train off of that album. And we've talked about your past, and you got the album Preachers and Pimps, and you talked about your father and your uncle, but it sounds like a lot on this album. In some ways, you went back to church a little bit.
Yeah, I grew up, you know, singing in church. That's what I have to give the most credit to for developing my musician abilities is singing in church. And I always wanted to do a gospel album of the type of music I liked to play when I was growing up. And so my favorite gospel music was always the music at the black churches. And I just liked the way it sounded, and it made me feel good. And so I just, on this album, Don't Let the Devil Ride, I picked out some really cool old classic gospel songs, mostly, and paid tribute and tipped my hat to that gospel experience.
You know, it's so interesting, and that song, Love Train, in particular, I guess the message isn't necessarily totally about the gospel, but it's about, in this day and age, it's about love and spreading love.
Well, that's what the gospel is.
Yeah.
You know? That's what I believe, you know. And you know, when Love Train originally came out, it was actually a disco song. It had a real fast beat, but we slowed it down because the words in that song are just so timely, and so they're timeless. I mean, the words of that song can be appreciated and by any generation in the past or the present or the future, because it's a message about all being all inclusive and not excluding anybody just because of maybe their race or where they're from, you know.
It's interesting you mentioned that being able to understand the lyrics, because it was really fast, like you said, the disco type song from the OJs, and it was hard to understand some of the lyrics. And when I was listening to your rendition when you first put it out, it's like, oh, that's what they say there. I get it, and it all, you know, everything kind of falls together and makes sense. Now, did you do all the arrangement of all the tunes?
No, I didn't do, you know, no, nobody succeeds alone. You know, uh-huh. I have my band around, and I had a producer, and, you know, we all work together and make suggestions, but no, I can't steer the boat by myself, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I get it. Don't Let the Devil Ride. You can check out Paul's website. You can get it there. Amazon. Where all is it available? Amazon, iTunes. You can get
everywhere.
Yeah.
It's available everywhere. You know, the world's changing quick, man. You know, technology's taken over, and, you know, like, you know, CDs are pretty much going in the way of the dinosaur. They're done. You know, it's how it goes. You know, the first thing that came out was, you know, records, and then they had 8 tracks, and they went away, and then they had cassettes, and then they went away. Now they got the CDs, and they're going away. Now the music is just on your phone or on some kind of device, you know.
Are you a guy, do you embrace all the technology? I mean, obviously, you have to in recording it and what you sell and everything, but when you're home, do you still have a turntable? Do you still throw some vinyl on? Do you still throw a CD on in your car?
You know, I've got one of those console record players like you used to have in your living room.
Oh, yeah.
I love the one with, and it's, you know, it's got tubes in it. It has to warm up before leaving play.
Piece of furniture.
And, yeah, I like it because, you know, does it sound as pristine and perfect as a, you know, a Bose speaker? No, but I like the rough sound of it. I like to hear the needle scratch on the record, and I've got a pretty good collection of records, and I listen to them all the time.
Well, and even like you said, it might not be the as great a sound, but there's just a different depth to it on vinyl.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. You know, the last two albums I've did, we did vinyls on both of them. We did vinyl on Don't Let the Devil Ride, and we did vinyl on the one before that. And, you know, people to me, wrongly say that vinyl's coming back. To say it's coming back, I wouldn't say that. It's still a niche group of people that even wants vinyl, but you know, it's a smaller group than people let on like it is. There's not as many people listening to vinyl as they think.
Yeah, because if it was, it would be way more readily available than it is. I mean, not that you can't find it, but, you know, some of the places, and you can find it even in some of the big box stores, but it's really, really expensive now, too.
Yeah. Sometimes people will buy a vinyl from me at a show, and really, they may not even ever listen to it. Sometimes now they just get it as a keepsake, you know, and they'll want me to sign it, and they might put it up on their mantle or something. And they tell me, a lot of them, that's what they do. They just want to have something to collect, you know. And very few of them are really, you know, listening to vinyl like people think they are.
Those that do are missing out on a great sound. It's like the guy that drives the whatever, the Ferrari or Lamborghini. Well, I don't want to drive it because you put miles on it. Well, why'd you buy it then? I mean, you listen to it. You got something great to listen to. Listen to it.
We had a console record player in my house when I was growing up, and when my first real heartbreak took place, and first little girl at school turned me down and broke my heart, I would lay by that record player and I'd play that Elton John song, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. I just listened to it over and over and wiped the tears off my cheeks with a Kleenex.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we had in my brother's room, we had the big console too that my brother actually made in shop class. We had the little, you know, the little record player with the speakers that would connect to the side you can put out, and we just track, you know, some going to bed sometimes, throw on Frampton Comes Alive.
Oh,
or,
yeah, Do You Feel Like I Do?
Yeah, or the Best of Bread sometimes, got the mellow side, or sometimes the rock side of that one, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a group I grew up listening to. Yep. Bread, my sister had all the Bread records, and I grew up listening to all that stuff. Yeah,
Paul Thorne joining us here this morning. He's huge. You hear him in Americana, roots, whatever you want to call that, blues music. You know, one of the songs that I hear, because sometimes, yes, I work in terrestrial radio, but yes, I got satellite radio in my car, because sometimes I'm on the road. I like to listen to different things, different music, and it's hard to find blues many places, so I listen to B.B. King's Bluesville, and one of them that comes up a lot, Paul, is Jesus Gonna Make Up My Dying Bed. Talk about that song, where that came from in your life.
It's just it's an old black spiritual, you know, that I've heard at the black churches, going back to what I said before, and it's just, it's a wonderful song, and it's a comforting song, because you know, everybody's afraid of dying. You know, I'm afraid of dying. Some people say there ain't, but I don't believe it. I believe everybody's scared of dying. And there's comfort in the song, because Jesus is going to make up my dying bed. What that's saying is, when your heart stops, you continue on. And it's a way of saying, you know, Christian believers, it's a comfort to say, you know, when my heart stops, somebody's going to come and get me, and I'm going to exist somewhere else. And that's the very comforting thing to a lot of people.
Yeah, it would be nice to get to that point where you're not scared of it happening, and you know, maybe right before it happens, when you realize where you're going to be and what's going to happen, then maybe. But yeah, I think I agree with you that most people that say they're not, yeah, you know, how can you not be?
Anything you ain't never done is always scary,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And in all reality, I don't think anybody's capable of knowing what really happens.
Paul Thorne joining us. Yeah, Paul Thorne joining us here this morning. He'll be at the Fat Fish Pub coming up on Thursday night. Opening up will be the Alice Drinks the Kool-Aid. They're out of Chicago, and they'll take the stage 6 o'clock Thursday night, followed by Paul Thorne. And, Paul, we love the fact that you still come here. I mean, people look at what you've done in your career like, man, that guy's way too big to be coming to Galesburg. But you like playing venues like the Fat Fish Pub.
Well, I like playing anywhere where people show up, and we can have a moment together. And, you know, sometimes I'll play a bigger place. Sometimes I'll play a smaller place. You should know, when I'm out on the road, I'm on tour, and, you know, I do all types of venues. And I especially love to come into the Fat Fish Pub. I've made so many friends over there. And the one benefit about playing in a smaller place is you actually get to have a brief conversation with pretty much everybody that's there. You know, whereas you go to play a big festival or something, there's no way you can talk to everybody. You know, it's just, and you're so far back, you know, when you play like a big studio, like a big festival or something, the crowd might be 100 yards away, you know, and it's very, very hard to connect with people when they're that far back, and there's so many. I mean, I like, don't get me wrong, the bigger the crowd, the better, but there's something about intimate venues like the Fat Fish Pub where, you know, you go there and you see your friends. It's different. You know, I know personally so many people. My favorite person to see is Chris. He's sort of a mascot over there. Have you seen? Do you know who Chris is?
Yep, Burl Werner's son, Chris. I know Chris.
Yeah,
yep.
Me, every time I see him, he's got a short memory. You know, he'll say, he'll say, Paul, what's your name? And then 5 seconds, I'll tell him my name, and 5 seconds later, he'll say, what's your name, Paul? He'll tell me my name and then ask me what my name is. And I never get tired of that because he's just so entertaining. And
like, now he's got a smile on his face, too.
Always. Man, yeah. we could all wish we could be as happy as Chris, man. I mean, he lives in his own world, man, and it's a good world to live in, you know.
Absolutely.
He'll sit in the front, and sometimes I'll have him count the songs off. I say, count this one off. He'll go, 1, 2, 3. No matter what the beat of the song is, he'll always say the same thing. 1, 2, 3. And he just has a ball, man. He lights the room up, and I try to involve him. And me and him, he likes my song Mood Ring, and most of the time when I go there, me and him will, I hold my cell phone out, and me and him will sing Mood Ring together. And I'll put it on my social media, and people love it. People love it.
Paul Thorne joining us. Yeah, he'll be at the Fat Fish Pub again this Thursday night. You know, but you mentioned you like, no matter what the venue you like playing, you get a different feel. But, you know, you can't, how do you turn down playing the Ryman, which you've played before? I mean, it's hard, you know, you can't turn that down.
Yeah. No, I like I said, the bigger the better. I'm in the business, you know, I am in a business. And
right.
In any business, just like in your business, you're trying to get more listeners. I'm trying to get more people to come to my show, you know, and so, sure, I want the crowd to be as big as it can. I was just saying that I can connect better in a small group because I can actually have an interaction with that's more intimate, you know.
You know, you recently you had a tour, and I actually saw this on PBS. You were traveling with the Blind Boys of Alabama. Talk about that and how that came about.
I met the Blind Boys playing various festivals. And I started out years ago. I was, I opened up for them, and I just met them. And they're the, in my opinion, some of the best of the best in the gospel music field. And when I got ready to do this gospel album, I wanted to get the best of the best to help me and add their stamp to it. And I just reached out to them, and they agreed to do it, and you know they sang all over on the whole record, and it was a magic time. It really was. And, you know, PBS filmed the making of it, and it aired nationally, and it was just a really fun experience. And I was really blessed to get those guys.
Paul Thorne, Thursday night, Fat Fish Pub. You can check him out there. Tickets on sale now, and he will be there. And Paul, as you mentioned, the great thing, and for us also, whether it's you or some of the other blues artists or other artists that come through here, it's really cool because when you take your break, you mingle in the crowd and get a chance to talk to people. I know I've gotten to talk to you before and get a picture with you, and that so it's really cool for us to get a chance to mingle with somebody like you.
Yeah, well, you know, I got that. I learned that the value of that from my father, the minister. You know, when he would get through preaching, he didn't just leave the church. He would go out there and mingle with people and shake their hand and thank them for coming. And like I said, he built relationships, real actual relationships. You know, and it's impossible to remember everybody's name when you meet 500 people a day. But I can always remember a face, and I can remember a moment. And, you know, and that's what's great about it.
Paul Thorne joining us here this morning. Yeah, we talked some about your background. I know we've had you on in the past. You mentioned your father, a Baptist minister, and growing up in Tupelo, Mississippi. And I know we talked about this before. I always got to bring it up, though. Former professional fighter. You were, what, 10-3-1 as a professional, as a middleweight back in the...
No, that's not... Well,
that's not right?
The record's not right.
Oh, it's not?
No, my professional record was 14-4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but, you know, that's all right. You know,
That's on your website, by the way. They need to change it. They need to update it for you.
I was, as an amateur, I was 27-3.
Okay.
As a pro, I was 14-4.
But one of the big ones, you got to see Roberto Duran on the other side of the ring.
Yes. Yeah, I did. I mean, it was an experience I got to have, and you know, it got down to basically. There's a difference between being good at something and being great at something. And somebody like Duran was in the great category, and I was in the good category. And, you know, that's just the reality of it. And he had way more experience than me, and he had way more talent than me. And, you know, but I gave it a good try, and I got some punches in, and I cut his eye and had to go sew it up after the fight. So, you know, it's not like I went in there and laid down. He knew I was there, but... He just, it was kind of like he had a 12 gauge and I had a BB gun.
But you went, what, 6 rounds with him, though?
Yeah, yeah. I would have went the whole fight, but I got a horrific cut on my lip. It was just horrific. And they had to stop it because I had a horrible cut on my lip. It split my whole mouth wide open. I didn't even, looking back, when my lip was hanging off my face, basically. I didn't even know I was cut. I was so pumped up on adrenaline. You could have sliced my arm with a knife, and I wouldn't have even noticed it. I felt great.
Yeah.
I wasn't tired. I had a whole lot of fight left in me, but they had to stop it because all of the blood that was coming down my chest, you know.
Well, and that was late in his career and after the No Mas, but still, you know, his nickname, Hands of Stone, I'm guessing they still felt like that.
Well, right after he beat me, he won the middleweight championship of the world. He was by no means shot, and it's a real sore spot for me when people refer to him as No Mas, because that's the thing that's wrong with the world. Whatever you do in your life, you will be remembered not for your greatest accomplishment, but you will be remembered for your biggest failure. That's just the human. People love to point out your bad moments. And you know, this is a guy, Roberto Duran, that was one of the greatest boxers who ever lived. And he won world titles in 4 different weight classes. And he had so much talent. But people only want to remember him for that one night when he turned and quit. But, you know, and I have my theory on that. I think what happened, he had a real problem with overeating, and this is just my opinion. Now, I don't know this is a fact, but my theory is he got in there and he was having some stomach issues that were fixing to get, I don't know how to say this delicately, but I think he was fixing to relieve himself in his pants. That's what I think personally, because he had a stomach issue and he was embarrassed, and I think that's why he quit.
Yeah, and he's said as much. And I know they had. Did you see? I think it was like a 30 for 30 on ESPN. They did talking about exactly that. And he never said no. I just quit. He was kind of indicating what you just said. That,
I mean, if you're in a boxing ring, you're fixing to crap your pants. It's hard to continue fighting.
Right. Yeah.
But this is a guy that was, Roberto Duran was a lot of things, but he was not a quitter. This son of a gun was in some of the roughest, toughest brawls of all time. So, you know, when people, anytime I mention his name and somebody goes, No Mas, it pisses me off because just the mentality of people, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I understand that. Yeah, I do get that because, yeah, he was one of the best. He was always fun to watch. And the fact you had the guts to get in the ring with him says a lot about you as well, because most of us would like, yeah, no Mas before we step in.
Well, heroes and cowards feel the same fear.
Mm-hmm.
They feel the same fear. The difference between a hero and a coward is a coward doesn't do anything, and the hero will step forward even though he's afraid.
That is a great saying. Appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, just I'm not calling myself a hero, but I'm just saying, you know, I was. I'm just letting you know I was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had every fight I ever had. I was afraid. Any boxer they'll tell you they weren't afraid. That's a lie. Even Duran was afraid. Trust me, he was afraid just like I was, because I was somebody he didn't know nothing about. And so,
well, I guess
he won, but he had a healthy fear too.
Yeah, I guess you have to have that to perform at a top level.
Absolutely, yeah. Because you know, you get in there and you're going against somebody that's trained for 3 months to practice for 3 months to kick your ass. And, you know. And that's a hard thing to face.
Yep, absolutely. Paul Thorne, he is going to be Thursday night. He's not going to be fighting. He's going to be playing music for you. Great storyteller. Tells great stories in his music as well. He's going to be at the Fat Fish Pub on Thursday night, and you can get your tickets. Paul, always appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Looking forward to seeing the show this Thursday night.
Yeah, man, I look forward to it.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Paul Thorne.